The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis. Welcome to the social studio.
You found the weekly podcast from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Trevor Dan, and I'm delighted to say that we have tracked down the BBC's controller of English regions, David Holdsworth, and he's on the line now from a studio in Birmingham. David, how are you?
I'm very well. Good morning to you. I'm glad you managed to track me down.
Exactly. Well, we're pleased because local radio has been a subject of some debate on this podcast and on the Radio Today website. Let me dive straight in and say, why did you write to all the staff and say that you think you need to start avoid stifling the personality? What's the new direction then for local radio?
Well, I think the thing about local radio is there are 39 stations, and so getting the communication right with the teams across quite a big and fragmented set of schedules is a task. So from time to time, I need to set out where we are in strategic terms. And I just felt the time had come to make it clear that warmth, personality, interaction, radio that really excites you is, you know, I think we all know this, don't we, is what will drive audiences. And I think I felt that on balance, the time had come to offer that reminder, while also actually updating our teams on some audience research we've been doing, being very clear with them about what our target audience is, which is important in the overall BBC context, and just to give them a clear sense of direction. I think the question I often get asked when I do staff meetings in different parts of the country is, can you just be clear with me about what our current strategy is? Because local radio is in some ways, it's a complicated beast. We set out to do quite a lot. We set out to not only tell people about what's happening where they live in terms of news, but sport, religion, new music. The schedules are trying to do quite a lot more than many of the tightly formatted radio stations are trying to do. So I think people are always wishing to seek clarity.
The implication, of course, is that over the past few years, perhaps you've drifted into what Rod McKenzie calls high fibre news, that some listeners have found it all a bit boring and a bit stuffy. Would you accept that?
I think there is a risk when you're doing high levels of speech, like any other content actually, that speech can stop being interesting. And I think there have been occasions when we probably haven't been rigorous enough on ourselves about ensuring that our journalism and our speech is as fascinating as everything else that's on the radio. So what this is about is a call to arms, really, to ensure that the journalism and the speech that we provide excites and engages our audiences. And I suppose, implicit in that, as you suggest, is an observation that on occasions it hasn't quite lived up to those standards here and there. It's very hard to generalise about a network of 39 stations. But I think on some, we have been guilty on occasions of letting interviews run on too long or picking an agenda that isn't quite, in terms of its overall tone, uplifting enough. And that's what I've really been asking teams to think about.
You've been a news editor in local radio in your past career. And I guess you understand as well as anybody that it is very easy, isn't it, to just fill up space in a bulletin or on an all-news breakfast show, recycling the press releases, talking to the same old councillors all the time. This is more of a challenge, isn't it, to try to make the news interesting.
Absolutely. I mean, I slightly joke with my teams that we should beware the risk of the sand and gravel quarry application, which can look fascinating on a council planning agenda, actually is really important in a number of ways in terms of building our roads and our houses, and for the people who might live near such a quarry, also very important. But those kind of stories, repeated time after time in an agenda, not very human, can on occasions end up being a bit dull, and that's what we're trying to avoid.
Looking through the comments on the Radio Today website, two names keep cropping up. James Whale at BBC Essex and Ian Lee at Three Counties Radio. People seem to think that they point the direction. I'm sure you don't want to just concentrate on a couple of names and pick out two people, but in broad terms, do you think those breakfast shows, which are more personality-driven, are the direction in which all your stations should go?
Well, you're right. I'm not going to single out individuals in such a big network, but we have dozens of strong personalities across local radio, both at breakfast time doing that kind of talk radio that Ian or James might do, but also a more convivial sound at other times of the day, particularly, for instance, late in the evenings. And, I would direct you to any agricultural show in this country and the local radio marquee, and watch the queue of people at that show wanting to meet our presenters. Our presenters are an important part of people's lives. They're the reason, we all know this, don't we? They're the reason people listen to the radio. You form an intimate and close relationship with this person that you let into your life. I'm very proud of the personalities and the range of them that we have across the local radio. And the way that when I travel around the country, I can switch on an individual station. And very often I instantly know what part of the country I'm in because that presenter gives me a sense of that area straight away. Particularly true, I think that's in the north of England.
3 years ago, of course, you took off all the evening programmes and asked all your stations to take a shared programme. How has that worked out?
Yeah, well, I did that rather reluctantly. I think I was honest about that at the time. It was about budgets and could we really afford to provide quality local output for 15 or 16 hours a day? And that was a compromise, frankly, that we made. Having said that, I am pleased with the overall performance of what we've been able to provide in the place of those individual local and regional programmes. In audience number terms, it's been tracking very well for the last 12 or 15 months. I think it does a useful job. I continue in strategic terms to be reluctant about it. I'd want our stations to be as local as possible, as often as possible. But like every other broadcaster, we do have to make budgetary compromises, and that is one of those.
I suppose talking about budgets leads us to talking about and thinking about your place within the great BBC pantheon. I wonder if you still feel, as I did when I worked in local radio, that it's not much loved in the great corridors of power, that people like to mention it when they're talking to MPs, but really the guys at the top of news are concentrating on the 6 and the 10 and on Panorama and Newsnight, and local radio isn't much in their thoughts. Do you feel that it needs a bit more love at the top of news?
No, I disagree with you, actually. Do many senior BBC execs who live in London spend their lives listening to local radio? Probably not, because they don't live those sort of lives. Do they understand what it brings to the BBC? First of all, in terms of the way it... The way it actually lights up lives across the country, brings a demographic that BBC Radio doesn't easily get elsewhere, the way it uncovers stories, themes and issues, all of those virtues, aside from the fact that politicians love it, are well understood. And I would say at senior levels of the BBC, the power of local radio, the importance of local to a public service broadcaster like the BBC is clearly and well understood.
So what do you say to your bosses when they say, David, why are you losing audience? You know, Radio 2, which you could argue is competitive with you in that older demographic, Radio 2 has put a lot of audience on in the past few years. You've lost an equal number. What do you say when they say, why is that happening?
Well, first of all, I remind them that there are nearly 7 million listeners. And that a lot of those listeners listen to no other BBC radio, so the importance of those listeners is crucial from the BBC point of view. I point out to them that local radio audience numbers actually grew between 2010 and the end of 2012. So this is, to a certain extent, a cyclical game. I point out, as you probably would do to me next, that the demographic that we serve is growing. The number of older people in this country is growing. That it's a very competitive environment. A lot of our competitors run very, very tight and undemanding formats, which are very easy to slip into. And I talk a little bit about our profile as well. I think there is I think when we play local radio to non-local radio listeners, not all of them, but some of them absolutely love it. They see the stories, they see the virtue of what we do, and they sort of say, well, why didn't I ever know that existed? And I think there is a job to do in terms of raising our profile, in terms of on air, in terms of being understood and known about on the rest of the BBC airwaves. So, that would be my summary for my bosses.
You mentioned the demographic and you've reinforced this notion that you're for the 50s to 70s, but you say you won't ignore the over 70s. Are you ignoring the over 40s?
No, we don't ignore anyone. And of course, historically and still today, a lot of younger people listen to BBC local radio, for instance, for its sporting content. But I think you'll know this as well as me, Trevor. Every radio station needs a demographic to aim at when it comes to, for instance, setting music policy. And this is about being clear about the audience that we're focusing in on, while not ignoring anyone else and hoping that many other people will choose to listen to us. But I think it is still a fact that our core audience are those people, particularly those people in their 50s and 60s, who often have formed a closer relationship with the area that they live in as they grow a bit older. Sometimes they retire, or sometimes, you know, through their children or their grandchildren or their activities. That is our core audience, and I just think it's useful for programme makers to have a core audience in mind as they plan their programmes.
We talk a lot, don't we, in politics and in media these days about devolution. And one of the criticisms of BBC Local Radio that you hear is that you and your team are very centralised, you know, that the power is from the top down, and that you don't allow enough influence on the local stations by the local community and the people who run them. Do you accept that any of that's true?
No, what I accept is that whatever you do, editors will probably say that, because people loved their sense of independence and their sense of empowerment. I mean, the truth is we give editors a budget. They operate under a licence that the Trust sign off, a service licence, which is clear about our target audience, the amount of speech we do, and our core task, which is to, you know, keep communities in touch with what's going on in the area that listeners live in. After that, our editors have a huge amount of freedom, and I encourage them to use that freedom to find the best personalities, to come up with new formats. You know, currently a lot of our editors are working on ways to serve the digital audience alongside the radio audience in a way in which I would say at the moment a thousand flowers are quite rightly blooming. So no, we're not a centralised network. There are certain things that we do for economies of scale reasons that are centralised. But in terms of the core editorial content, what we put out on the radio every day, that's up to the individual editors. And I think that's what makes us unique and exciting.
How do you feel about the accusation from John Whittingdale and others, Boris Johnson is one of them, that BBC Local Radio's move into the digital space is damaging local newspapers?
Well, I don't accept that. I think wherever you go in the world, whether there is a public service broadcaster like the BBC or not, local newspapers are finding the transition to digital a difficult business proposition. Local radio stations do a very different job to local newspapers. We are dealing with the main stories of the day, but not the level of and quantity of stories that local newspapers are doing. You know, our job is about radio, and it's about holding decision makers to account. We cover the world of arts, the world of new music. BBC Introducing is a very a very effective brand these days. Religion. These are all areas that are, you know, public service in nature, very different to what local newspapers are providing. We work increasingly in partnership with local papers in the digital space, but I do think there's room for the BBC and other local providers, and that's a healthy ecosystem, which means we get the highest possible quality of local journalism and local coverage of life in this country.
One final thing, David, you are controller of English regions across not just radio and not just online, which you've spoken about, but also television. Do you think of those three components as being a part of one overall mission that you have? You know, particularly, do you think of radio and television people as being the same, delivering really the same core activity? Or do you think there is room for more specialist radio skill?
Well, I think in terms of the offer, we are an integrated proposition. We're here to serve local and regional audiences for the BBC, whether that be on the radio, on the television in terms of news, on the television in terms of current affairs, or whether in the digital space. But I think each of those platforms does require specialist skills, and radio especially so. And I think we should nurture and love the people that create the sound, the tone, and the music of local radio, and the programming skills, those rather nuanced, silky skills that are about a program running order that will really work for the listener. Those are skills that take time to develop. They're partly instinctive, they're partly about experience. And, you know, in a sense, what I wrote to our staff about a couple of weeks ago is about the nurturing of those skills and developing those for the future and loving it, radio that is interesting and exciting. That's what this is all about.
David Holzer, thank you very much for talking to Radio Today. We do appreciate your time, and I guess everybody's going to wish you well, because there is a lot of love out there in the radio community for local radio, and nobody wants it to wither on the vine.
Quite the opposite is happening, I assure you, Trevor. It's thriving.
Excellent. Well, thank you, David. Thanks for your time. We appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Cheers. Take care.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
David Holdsworth, controller of BBC English Regions. And on next week's podcast, we'll have a real treat for cricket fans. Adam Mountford, producer of Test Match Special, will be talking to us from the boundary at Trent Bridge. So still to come on this show, David Lloyd's Radio Moments. But first, the news with Radio Today's editor, Roy Martin.
Thank you, Trevor, and thank you to David for coming on the Radio Today programme, of course. In the news this week, then, Quidem has sold Oak FM to a local company entering the radio industry for the first time. Oak FM, which includes two licences, is now fully owned by ATR Media. UTV is facing competition from Fusion Radio for its Telford licence. It's currently broadcasting the output of Signal 107 from Wolverhampton, and we'll find out in the next few months who has won. And the first Minimux has launched in Brighton, the home of the original test for small-scale DAB. You can find more on this story and many more on radiotoday.co.uk. That's the very latest. I'm Roy Martin.
Broadcast Bionics, creators of Phonebox and Oasis, offer you elegantly integrated products and intelligent one-stop shopping for all your studio needs. Discover a full range of innovative studio products. Play out by Wide Orbit, Music Master Scheduling, Stirlitz, Newsboss, Larvo, Telos, Axia, Omnia, Digigram and Commotion. Visit bionics.co.uk today.
It's exactly 1 year now since the shock news that we'd lost one of the early Radio 1 breakfast show presenters.
Mike Smith.
Smithy.
Radio 1.
You could be the only breakfast DJ on Radio 1 who went, right, that'll do me. Thanks very much, ta-ra.
Well, it probably wasn't the right decision because I'm now not front of camera or front of microphone and missing it all. Oh, radio I miss more than television.
Right.
And radio I miss tremendously.
Mike Smith, who died this week last year. David Jacobs hosted his final show this week in 2013.
Anthony Newley with the orchestra conducted by Eric Rogers bringing this week's collection to a close. I'll be here at the same time next week, so until then or whenever. On behalf of my producer, Alan Boyd, it's good night from me, David Jacobs.
The last words on air from David Jacobs. He'd been on radio since it was a 30-something on the General Forces programme, BFBS, Radio 4 and, of course, Radio 2. David died just a month after those words, his last show closing the door on the light programme legacy. 8 years ago this week, the two oldies services, Classic Gold from GWR and Capital Gold, were replaced by a new oldies service from GCAP. It was called Gold.
And alongside much-loved singles, we also mix in more rarities, including album tracks, B-sides and live performances. Hello, this is Sean Tilley. It's my job to play the music for you between midday and four every weekday. Mike Sweeney here with Drive Time on Gold from four. And right now, these are the Bee Gees, Staying Alive, followed by some Ike and Tina Turner.
Gold in its inaugural week in 2007. 21 years ago, BBC Southern Counties launched. Now, let me get this right. BBC Southern Counties had been BBC Sussex and Surrey, which comprised the old Radio Surrey and Radio Sussex.
And actually, when we went out and spoke to people, they always used to refer to us as BBC Sussex anyway. And it just became the obvious thing. Why don't we just go back to having Sussex in our name?
And of course, Radio Sussex, before it was Radio Sussex, was called Radio Brighton.
This is BBC Radio Brighton.
And please let me know if I got that right. Or actually don't, please, we've had enough. 1989 now, and something new on 252.
This is Atlantic 252. To improve your reception of our signal on the long wave band, you could simply try lifting your radio set and turning it around a little bit to either the left or the right. Regular broadcasts of Atlantic 252 will begin soon.
Atlantic 252 starting test transmissions from Ireland this week, 26 years ago. It was to become huge. This week, 4 years ago, the radio world lost a lively character. He'd been the launch PD at London's capital.
It was a tabula rasa. It was an empty space. We could do what we liked, I mean, within the IBA as it was then's limits. And we did all kinds of things. I mean, we did a live soap opera, for example. I mean, the people we had on board were extraordinary. We had, You know, we had Aspel and Everett, we had Roger Scott, we had Nicky Horn, and we had amazing ladies too, Marsha Hunt, Joan Shenton, Sue Cook. Well, we had the first woman newsreader ever. Sue Denny, her name was.
Michael Bucht, who also helped to found Classic FM, he died this week in 2011. When a station closes, it's always sad. For so many, it's like losing a friend, not least if you work there, and it's all the government's fault anyway.
Hello there, this is Ted Aubury. And this time, it's not bringing you Red Sands Rendezvous, it's to say goodbye. You and I have seen a lot of things happen in the last 2 years. The first commercial radio station serving Great Britain. And from midnight on August 15th, a new set of restrictions on the people of this country. It will then be illegal for a newspaper to write about pirate radios. The only subject, and I emphasise that, the only subject that it's illegal for a newspaper to write about.
The closure of Radio 355 this week in 1967. It had been the last 60s pirate to open broadcasting from its ship in the North Sea. So, with Terry Wogan celebrating his 77th birthday...
The proliferation of radio stations has led to a tremendous lowering of standards.
Dale Winton's first show on commercial radio 38 years ago...
As ILR was growing and new stations were opening, everybody was sort of like trying to get into real radio.
The death of Sir Robin Day 15 years ago.
I'd like people to remember me as someone who made their... occasionally brought some entertainment or interest into their lives.
And the return of Noel Edmonds to Radio 2 12 years ago.
Please be gentle. I've not done anything like this for a while.
Those are this week's Radio Moments. Radio
Moments! Thank you, David Lloyd. This has been a TDC production. I'm Trevor Dan. We'll have Adam Mountford from TMS for you next time. Thanks for listening.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.